district in Leicestershire, and there, snugly between the two, Himalaya. In Sanskrit, abode of snow. Vast mountain system in Central Asia, lying along the south edge of the plateau of Tibet, enclosed by the Indus and the Brahmaputra rivers. It extends generally east-southeast in an immense curve about 1,500 miles long. There wasn't a word in that brief description that didn't thrill me. What the Sahara is to desert, the Himalaya is to mountains. Both share the same contradictory attractions, appealing and appalling, tempting and terrifying in equal and ultimately irresistible measure. All the elements that appeal to me most about travel were on offer. The stimulus, mental and physical, of working at extremes, the breaking of new ground, I had never been to any of the places on our route, and the chance to go in by the back door, as it were, and see how lives are lived in a fascinatingly mixed bag of countries. Superpowers of the future, like India and China. Countries like Pakistan, recently pushed to the centre of international politics. Secretive, unconquered mountain kingdoms, like Nepal and Bhutan. And remote lands on the margin of the world's consciousness, like Nagaland and Ladakh. The idea seemed to appeal to my team as instantly as it did to me, and setting aside advancing ages and hopes for quieter lives, we committed to a Himalayan journey at the beginning of 2003. From the outset, problems loomed as large as the mountains themselves. Pakistan was, though I'm glad to say no longer is, the subject of a Foreign Office advisory against all but essential travel. The whole Kashmir region was highly volatile, and the Maoists in Nepal were engaged in an increasingly threatening guerrilla war with the government. The Chinese were highly sensitive about allowing television crews into Tibet, and the Indian government was wary of our safety in Assam. To their enormous credit, our production team soothed troubled brows successfully, and we were able to leave for the Khyber Pass in May 2003. The schedule was very tight, and I'm aware that these diaries are stronger on spontaneity than sober reflection. What I feel we have achieved, nonetheless, is to put the Himalaya in a human perspective. The scope of our journey means that this is not a mountaineer's account of the Himalaya, it's a traveller's account. This is Himalaya not from top to bottom, but from one end to the other. From the Khyber Pass, where, in a tight knuckle of mountains, the great ranges of the Hindu Kush, the Karakoram and the Himalaya are born, to Bangladesh, where the Himalaya, reduced to dust and sand, is swept out into the waters of the Bay of Bengal. Great journeys tend to bring me out in a rash of overused superlatives, so all I will say this time is that Himalaya was a wonderfully, magically brilliant journey, with more gasps of astonishment per square mile than any other in my entire life. And for once, I think I might be right. But a word about dates. We began our journey on 12th of May 2003, and due to vagaries of the climate, timing of religious festivals, and other key events like polo matches and horse fairs, returned to the region at various times before our final arrival home on 7th of April 2004. Since I put these diaries together, there have been significant changes in the region, mainly affecting India and Pakistan, and by and large, hopeful. Even before the defeat of the BJP in the Indian elections in May 2004, cross-border relations with Pakistan had been improving, and both sides were pledged to a peaceful outcome in Kashmir, the most troubled area we went through. On the 22nd of May 2004, Pakistan was readmitted to the Commonwealth after 5 years, a decision which India supported. The day after that decision, a bomb killed 33 people in Kashmir. Change clearly won't happen overnight, but there is cause for cautious optimism. Less so in Nepal, where the Maoists and the government seem unable to sink their differences. Pakistan. Day 1. Up the Khyber. Below the walls of the fort that guards the Khyber Pass, there is a viewing platform on which rows of chairs are set out, facing Afghanistan, like circle seats at the theatre. They convey an air of expectation of something about to happen, of a curtain about to rise on great events. Castes of thousands have at one time or another filled the plains below, as greedy armies, seeking the great prize of India, gathered at this narrow western gateway. Darius I, king of Persia, led his soldiers through the pass nearly 500 years before the birth of Christ. He was followed nearly 2 centuries later by Alexander